Hi, Gary. Welcome back. Good to see you. Well, thank you all for joining us this morning. This morning, I'm pleased to announce the kickoff of a statewide effort to end the tragedy of traffic fatalities on Iowa highways. Last year, 317 men, women, and children died on Iowa highways. While this is a decrease in fatalities from past years, it's simply still not acceptable. Having no traffic fatalities on Iowa's roads may sound like an unattainable goal, but when you think about the goal you have for your family, it's always going to be zero fatalities. If each of us adopts a zero goal for our own families, we can make zero a reality for the state. To achieve this, we all must give full attention to the task of driving when we are behind the wheel. That's why the Iowa Departments of Transportation, Public Health, and Public Safety, through the Governor's Traffic Safety Bureau, have teamed up to introduce Zero Fatalities Program for Iowa. The program itself is simple. It focuses on increasing awareness of dangerous driving behaviors. Today, we'll start to see radio, television, and online ads that encourage motorists to slow down, drive sober, focus on the road, stay alert, and buckle up every seat every time. In addition to simply focusing on the task of driving when you're behind the wheel, we need to change the way people view traffic fatalities. These are not just numbers. Each one represents someone's family member. These deaths are not inevitable. They are preventable. Each of us has a responsibility to check our behavior behind the wheel, as what we do has a direct impact on the number of fatalities that happen on Iowa's roadways. Our departments of public safety, public health, and transportation personnel do excellent work. The Iowa State Patrol does exceptional work educating and enforcing traffic safety. Together, I'm confident that we can make significant progress. And now I'm pleased to turn it over to Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds.
Well, good morning, and thank you, Governor Branstad. And of course, when I first heard about this program, I wasn't sure that zero was really realistic or reachable goal for Iowa. But when you think about your family and friends, how would you feel if you had to accept the fact that you lost any of them to a traffic fatalities? And so this is an opportunity to continue to educate Iowans. And as the governor said, don't we all have a goal of zero fatalities for the people that we love? If each of us have a personal goal of zero, that makes the collective goal seem much more realistic. And here are some ways that Iowans can really improve and prevent traffic deaths. Iowa has a high seatbelt usage rate at more than 90%, which is to be commendable, but 171 of the people who died last year were not properly restrained, and that's a problem that we can fix if we work together. Speed was another factor in 158 of the 317 deaths last year, so maybe that 5 to 10 miles an hour over the speed limit isn't as safe as some people believe that it is. The last two behaviors were distracted driving and drowsy driving, are dangers that are difficult to associate with statistics, but we know that a distracted and a drowsy driver cause hundreds of crashes each year. And of course, we know that getting to zero is not going to be easy, but traffic crashes can be complicated, and many of them have multiple factors involved. But I hope that by emphasizing the need to slow down, focus on the road, stay alert, and buckle up, we can move our fatality numbers steadily down and eventually reach our goal of zero. And now I'd like to turn the podium over to Director Claybaugh.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor Reynolds. As both the Governor and the Lieutenant Governor have said, when it happens to someone close to us, we would all agree that traffic fatalities are not acceptable. But there are more than 32,000 people killed in traffic crashes every year in the United States, and that's the equivalent of 90 individuals in an airplane crash every single day. That's exactly what's happening on our highways. As a result of the data that we collect at the Department of Public Health from death certificates and from emergency medical services providers, we know trauma has a devastating impact on Iowans. For example, in Iowa, motor vehicle crashes are the second most frequent cause of trauma-related death and hospitalization. And we know these crashes and their effects on injured items are becoming more severe. As one of the leading causes of death in the United States, traffic fatalities are not just a transportation or a public safety issue, they're a public health issue as well. As a culture, we've come to expect traffic deaths as inevitable. And while our department works to support strong EMS and trauma systems in Iowa, we know more can be done to prevent unnecessary motor vehicle deaths among Iowans. That's why I'm pleased to be here today to support our strengthening of this prevention message. Director Trombino.
Thank you, Director Claybaugh. The Zero Fatalities Program goal is to change the perception that fatalities are inevitable. If you drive on Iowa's interstates on Mondays, you will see a message that shows how many lives have been lost on Iowa highways so far this year. Included with the fatality number is a safety message. We have heard from several people since we started the messages that they are uncomfortable with seeing the fatality numbers weekly. This is the type of response we had anticipated to receive. Our natural emotional discomfort to see, as of today, this calendar year, 127 people have died on Iowa roads. 127 sons, daughters, fathers, mothers, cousins, aunts, uncles, and friends. In addition to the overhead signs, our respective agencies have been working on programs under the Zero Fatalities umbrella, aimed at improving safety on Iowa's roadways. We have also worked together to develop a website, ia.zerofatalities.com, along with a companion social media presence. The website houses a video of Iowans' perceptions of traffic fatalities, and I'm going to play the video real fast for everybody today.
Thousands?
Thousands, I would think.
5,000, 6,000?
30,000?
Maybe 1,000?
25,000.
20,000?
Probably texting.
Texting.
People not paying attention?
Probably most of them drunk driving.
Speeding, drunk driving, reckless driving.
Texting and people have been drinking too much.
I would say careless driving.
Drunk driving, speeding. Texting, listening to the radio, talking to passengers.
Everybody says speed and alcohol.
Alcohol, drugs, and teenage driving.
God, I agree with that, distracted driving also.
Thousand something.
I would say over 1,000.
500.
Probably 500 or more.
1,000 maybe?
500?
A lot. I lost a friend 6 months ago.
To make it less than 100?
The lower hundreds for now. I think I would start with smaller goals and then get to larger goals.
I suppose, 100, 200?
Not sure, maybe 100.
Realistically, if you could cut it in half to a couple hundred, that would be a good goal.
Two? Yeah, I think that'd be a good baseline.
Absolutely none. Zero. Zero. Definitely.
Zero.
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 That would be zero, of course.
Zero.
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 Well, for my family, zero.
It should be. It should be, yes.
Yes. I would think so, yes.
The goal should be,
yes. Should be zero, yeah.
I would hope that would be everybody's goal, not to have any fatalities on the road.
Finally, I'll turn it over to Director Larry Noble to conclude today.
Thank you, Governor Branstad. Governor Reynolds. The Department of Public Safety is honored to be here to support the Governor's office and other agencies across our state that will be working together on the Zero Fatalities Initiative. There's no more important aspect of government than to protect its citizens, and that's what Zero Fatalities program is all about, saving lives. With the Department of Public Safety, through the Governor's Traffic Safety Bureau and the Iowa State Patrol, embrace the Zero Fatalities campaign and pledge our support through awareness, community outreach, enforcement, and most importantly, education to do our part to save lives on Iowa highways. We all know working towards zero fatalities will not be easy. Accomplishing extraordinary feats rarely are. I'm proud to say Iowa's always been a leader in traffic safety. With the implementation of Zero Fatalities campaign, that trend is continuing. Since the first trooper took the oath of office in 1935 and the candidates being trained in our academy, the mission of the State Patrol and the entire Department of Public Safety has been to promote traffic safety to the best of our abilities. This proud tradition will continue as we join forces with our fellow traffic safety stakeholders through the Zero Fatalities campaign. Again, it is an honor to be here today, and I thank you for recognizing the importance of traffic safety and how it truly impacts us all. Okay, thank you. Are there questions?
I'm looking at this chart here. And
right.
The one statistic that jumps out at me is that driving while male seems to be something. 74% of the fatalities were men. Can someone speak to that? I don't know.
Why there are more men that are fatalities?
I was actually at a national conference recently, and that was discussed, and the question really became of, you know, why men versus women, and a lot of that has to do with the how they choose to drive. The statistics show that men tend to take more risks while they're driving, and that has shown very clearly consequences, and that's consistent across all of the states, that number that you see there. In the sense of fatalities, I don't know the specific statistic on helmet law fatalities. But again, I'd say overall, what you see in the fatalities is men taking higher risks, riskier behaviors while driving on the system.
So, on those 41 motorcycle deaths, you don't know how many of them were wearing helmets?
I do not know the answer to that.
Other questions?
Will part of this?
Well, education and enforcement to go together along with engineering, so it's important that all three of those aspects, that we do everything and do all that we can to make that happen.
Yeah.
Well, we did a special program on Interstate 80 last year. This is a more specific campaign, but Paul, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, this grew out of our Strategic Highway Safety Plan, which all the departments participated in, and really wraps an umbrella campaign directed specifically at zero fatality. So that was a separate thing coordinated by the department. Very similar, yeah. They have there's a lot of campaigns out there towards zero fatality, zero deaths. Ours is sort of wrapped under the umbrella of zero fatalities. A lot of national campaigns built off that. I think it's a message that, well, if you look at our statistics, our five-year average has declined, and which we think is a good sign. But what we want to do is embrace what everyone embraces, which is zero fatalities for their families. It's the message that we all carry, and as a state, we should carry the same goal and strive towards that.
There was a zero fatalities effort last year just on
I-80. Right. There was an Interstate 80 across the nation. About speeding and other issues that was done and coordinated by Governor's Traffic Safety Bureau.
Did you say there's been 127 fatalities so far this year?
This year, that's correct.
Does that mean that we're on pace for 250 or typically more in the late first of the year?
The months are different. Obviously, there are some higher months. I think September is actually typically our highest month. But we're right around where we were last year. But, again, 127 is too many. What we want to do is encourage people to make good choices. When they're out, pay attention, know what the speeds are, know how they're driving, be aware of what's happening around them, really make good choices on the system.
Are there questions on the subject? Other subjects?
Governor, former House Attorney Ryan Lamb testified at
Okay, I want to go through the facts so that you all know the facts. First, our office was not aware of confidentiality provisions within personnel settlements, nor were we aware of any payments made for confidentiality. Upon learning of these following the March 16, 2014 media report, my staff, at my direction, conducted a review on agreements and also looking at if there were any confidentiality provisions. And that review was completed, and on the 24th of March, I signed Executive Order 85, ending the ill-advised practice and increasing openness, transparency, and accountability. Executive Order 85 increases openness by banning confidentiality provisions in personnel settlements in the executive branch of state government. It increases transparency by posting all personnel settlements for the public to view on the Department of Administrative Services website. It increases accountability by implementing a process for approval of any personnel settlement entered into by the state and an employee. Second, when I asked my staff to begin gathering the facts following the March 16th media report, Matt Hench, Chief of Staff, did talk directly with Ryan Lamb about the personnel settlements before we issued our report and signed Executive Order 85 on March 24th. In fact, if you read that report, it specifically states that Matt Hench had talked with Ryan Lamb. I asked Matt Hench to meet with Ryan Lamb a second time, this time following the March 24th report. In both meetings, both before and after March 24th, the March 24th report, and the signing of Executive Order 85, Ryan Lamb insisted that no money was paid specifically for confidentiality. Following comments made by former DAS employees, and right before, the night before Mike Carroll was scheduled to talk with legislators, Ryan Lamb informed Matt Hench and Mike Carroll that there may be an email showing money was paid for confidentiality, but he was not sure. Mike Carroll, who was still the director of the Department of Administrative Services at that time and had access to the DAS documents, repeatedly told me, the Lieutenant Governor, and Matt Hench that no money was paid for confidentiality. On April 7th, I expressed confidence in Mike Carroll because he had assured me and my staff that no money was paid for confidentiality. On April 8th, when information showed that money was paid for confidentiality provisions, I took decisive action and terminated Mike Carroll as a director of the Department of Administrative Services. In regards to emails, as you know, Iowa law prevents personnel matters from being disclosed. We believe it's important to display professionalism and abide by the law with respect to personnel information. Last session, I supported legislation to increase transparency in regard to personnel files. That bill passed the House with bipartisan support. Unfortunately, Senate Democrats refused to consider the bill to increase openness in state government.
Were you aware, though, of him calling Matt Hench and Mr. Carroll the day before Mr. Carroll testified? April 7th?
My staff keeps me informed, and Matt Hench had told me that he had met with him twice, and he had emphatically denied that there was any confidentiality agreements in return for payments. And then when he called and said there may be something, but he wasn't sure, we then contacted Mike Carroll, and Mike Carroll assured us, and remember, Ryan Lamb was no longer an employee of the Department of Administrative Services at that point. Mike Carroll was the director, and he assured us that there were no payments in return for confidentiality. We relied on that until it became evident that there was an email to the contrary, And I immediately directed my chief of staff, Matt Hinch, to notify Mike Carroll that he was terminated.
Should your staff have reviewed those documents and found that email independently of the conversation?
Well, wait a minute. We never had access to those documents. The person that had access to those documents was the director of the Department of Administrative Services.
And record, right? You could request.
Well, wait a minute. We don't have time to review every single record that there might be. When we get requests, my staff obtains those information, but there are millions of records in state government, and there's no way for us to possibly know what's in everything. And we rely on information that is provided to us by the people that are in charge of those departments and agencies.
Was your trust misplaced? Should you place more weight on Ryan Lamb's warning?
Well, first of all, twice Ryan Lamb said no, there were no provisions. So we relied on him and we relied on Mike Carroll. And then when he said, well, maybe there might be, then we went back to Mike Carroll again and he assured us that there wasn't. And when it turned out not to be the case, we took decisive action and terminated him. I think more importantly is I signed an executive order on the 24th day of March to see this doesn't happen again in the executive branch of state government. And we supported legislation that would extend that to local governments and the other branches of state government. Senate Democrats are the ones that refuse to open personnel information. I think the public has a right to know this, and present law doesn't permit us to make that information public, and we abide by the law.
Mr. Carroll asserted that Janet Phipps was the person that he relied upon to review the email correspondence, and he told legislators that she had assured him there was no email.
Remember, when Ryan Lamb left, then Mike Carroll hired Janet Phipps to take his place. So Janet was new on the job, and it is my understanding that they could not find this information that I think was obtained by the attorney representing the former state employee. So that information came from the other side, from the attorney representing the other state employee, the former state employee. The department could not locate it.
Has the department still yet been able to locate those documents on their own independently on their
computer? Matt, is that the case? So,
it's my understanding that when the actual email search conducted by DAS took place, they were unable to locate the email that Mrs. Frank's attorney provided to the media. Upon finding that information, it's my understanding that DAS utilized the chief information officer to go back and go through a separate email vault that did include the email that was referenced in the media and released by your organization on April 8th.
Well, listen, this information was brought to our attention on the 16th day of March. I was on vacation in Arizona. I asked my staff, I want to find out, are there any confidentiality agreements that have occurred? First of all, I want to know about, and they did, in a matter of a week, they reviewed and located all of the different settlements that had been made, and my staff did that work very diligently to do that. They also located, I think, 24 confidentiality provisions that were in, how many agreements were there?
300.
Over 300 agreements, and that information was made available to me. As you recall, I came back on a Friday afternoon. I came to the office. And I asked them also to review how we could assure that this never happens again. And so we prepared Executive Order 85. And I took action on Monday. In fact, I delayed my trip to Washington, D.C. for the Borlaug event in order to be here to address that, and I had a press conference, and I released Executive Order 85. So as soon as we knew information, we took decisive action to prevent it. I think you know that I have a strong commitment to openness and transparency in government. I'm very disappointed that Senate Democrats are unwilling to open personnel information. I think this information, because taxpayers' money is being used to pay salaries and to pay these settlements, I think the public has a right to this information. We relied on him, and he was the director of the department. And so I think, you know, we relied on him, and I expressed confidence in him. And when it turned out the facts didn't support what he'd assured us, I thought that was the appropriate action we needed to take. We needed to take decisive action and say, this kind of thing's not going to happen again. I've already signed the executive order, and I'm going to assure that it doesn't happen again. I'm very pleased with the changes that Janet Phipps has already made in the Department of Administrative Services, and I think things are on track.
Governor, there's an audit out this morning from the State Auditor's Office about the Department of Administrative
yep.
Services for procurement practices. Are you aware of that audit?
Yes.
In response to that, or concerns that show deeper issues with the department?
This involves a particular individual in the department that I think did some inappropriate things, this has now, the department has taken action to see that this cannot happen in the future. Now, this is also, and it's a personnel issue that's also been appealed, and it's gone through arbitrators and whatever, and I've got to be really careful about talking about personnel matters, but some of that information will be public record with regard to the disposition of this case. But I can tell you that I think it's wrong what occurred there. I agree with the auditor's report, and it's my understanding that the Department of Administrative Services has stopped this practice. No, they're not doing that. What they did is, and I will say this, in this era in which we lived in social media, we have some really sharp young people that have been able to obtain, you know, and purchase the a particular website, but they identified who it is that has that website, and so we were able to obtain that website, and this kind of stuff happens all the time. This is kind of the new social media sorts of activities that occurs in politics today. And the Democrats used to have a big jump on us in that area, but that's no longer the case. And that's why people like Tim Albrecht and the people that are involved in the campaign, Jake Ketzner and Tommy Schultz, I think, they've become very adept and very effective at that, but they also very clearly made it really clear who it was that had this website, and I just got to give them credit for being way ahead of the other campaign.
Are you confident that there's no bleed over between yours and your governor's staff here and the campaign and these activities?
Well, just to say that I think that we have a very dedicated group of people working in the governor's office, and I think they do a good job. I also feel that we have a very talented, hardworking group of people working for the campaign, and I think they're doing a good job. And I can tell you, both the lieutenant governor and I have gotten extraordinarily positive comments about the ads that we have on television, about how positive they are and how they're factual and point out the progress we've made and how hard we're working to grow the Iowa economy and bring good jobs here, reform education, and how we've got the state's financial house in order. What a contrast that is to the neighboring state of Illinois, where some of our ads are running on TV stations that are seen by people in Illinois, and people in Illinois are saying it. Maybe we ought to hire Governor Branstad, contract with him to manage the state of Illinois, because he knows a much better way to manage things than we do in our state.
Well, on the website issue, kind of pretending this bag of dirty trick, kind of a sneaky thing to do.
No, this is just politics. This is the kind of stuff that happens all the time. This has happened to us,
yeah.
And it's happened to many others, and it's just a matter of who gets there first, and you can buy these websites pretty cheap, and so for a small amount of money, they were able to have some real fun. Well, this happened in the past in campaigns where the other side has purchased websites. We're just getting smarter and more effective and more nimble. Yes?
Brian Lamb testified that he had met fairly regularly with Brenna Finley about settlement agreements, and he said he also had taken steps to include confidentiality clauses as a matter of course in their draft settlement agreements. When you say
I'm going to let Brenna answer that. First of all, well, yeah, I'll just let her answer it because she would know.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, I did not review or approve any confidentiality clauses in settlement agreements. I was aware generally that the state settles grievances with employees. I have instructed and provided legal advice to our staff that it is important to be careful and professional with email, and certainly any confidential information that might be in an email needs to be carefully labeled, and it's better not to use email to deliver confidential information. That includes things such as social security numbers or credit cards. It's a best practice.
Yes.
I asked, I have provided advice that emails should be used professionally and carefully, and that all care should be taken with confidential information. It's not a good vehicle for confidential information. It's very important that we protect confidential information under the open records laws and also in other circumstances.
What's your advice partly to avoid the state's open records
laws? I provided advice to help protect confidential information that we are required to keep confidential under Iowa law.
Again, let me point out, if we just open the personnel information, and that's an exception to the open records law that I believe is outmoded and should be eliminated, we wouldn't have this problem. It is Senate Democrats that refuse to do that. This bill passed the House overwhelmingly. It makes sense, and there's no reason why the public should be kept in the dark as to how their tax money is being spent.
Brenda, would you have not read any of the settlement agreements that might have had a constitutional out of the clause in? I mean, there wouldn't have been an opportunity for you to do that or recently.
I did not review, sign off, approve any of the settlement agreements that had confidentiality clauses in them. I didn't approve the use of confidentiality agreements in these settlement agreements at issue. I did not review them. I was not aware that they were included in these agreements.
I would just point it out. The governor's staff is not involved in these matters of settlement agreements. These things are handled by the Department of Administrative Services. They're handled through the Public Employee Relations Board. We have a lot of responsibility in this office. And this is something that we do not deal with on a day-to-day basis.
What is your staff policy regarding talking about policy rather than face-to-face?
Well, we like to have face-to-face meetings whenever possible. We think this is the best and most effective way. Sometimes by telephone or by email, certain things are communicated just to facilitate, but I think, and I'm one that believes very much in the more face-to-face contact you can have. The Lieutenant Governor and I go to all 99 counties. We meet with people on a regular basis. We hold a regular press conference every week. Last week, we spent a lot of time in Northeast Iowa, the week before in Northwest Iowa, and we have a lot of meetings, face-to-face meetings. We get a lot of information that way. A lot of times we find out things that we're able to then call departments and agencies to address concerns that citizens bring to our attention. And I think this is the way government needs to be, open and responsive, and we try to be accessible to meet with people on a regular basis.
But you don't take steps to avoid an electronic trail?
No, we try to do things in the best and most efficient way we can, and we try to make sure that we get accurate information.
Brian Lamb said you two vetted a Dunkin' Donuts. Sure. That just seemed an odd place for the governor's chief of staff to hold a meeting.
I have meetings with various people in various places all throughout the state. It's a responsibility serving as a governor, lieutenant governor's chief of staff, that I don't take lightly. And from time to time, I don't have a meeting in my office. From time to time, it's nice to get outside of the building and venture somewhere else.
I would say Subway is a better place.
I can tell you where they're a lot.
Right. I've been to most of them around the state, and the food is healthier than Dunkin' Donuts. Although I could say this, my son-in-law is from Massachusetts, and he loves Dunkin' Donuts, especially the coffee. Okay, thank you very much. Not much. I think we need to focus on the future and how we can improve public policy. And that's why I brought up the fact that the biggest and best thing that they could do would be to endorse and support eliminating this personnel exception to the open records law. And we have all the speculation about what's in this. Let's just make it public. Then future employers would know why a person was dismissed and whether this is somebody that would be a good prospect to be hired. Presently, we have people that are dismissed because it's kept confidential. Then another employer hires the same person, and the same thing can happen again. This, I think, puts the public at risk, and I don't think it's good public policy, and that's why I feel strongly that the exception to the open records law for personnel is too broad and should be eliminated. Now, I understand why you don't want to make this public until after a decision has been made. So if somebody makes an accusation, it turns out not to be accurate, then that shouldn't be public. But once a settlement's been reached, or once a final disposition of the case has been made, I believe that should then be made public. And of course, we're doing that to the extent we can, but the Attorney General is redacting all of those things that are considered to be personnel. Now, so we're trying to be as open as we can be, but yet we have a law that prevents us from sharing with the public all the information that they should have a right to.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you.